Thelema, Coast to Coast, Show 26, May 18th, 2006. Do what thou wilt should be the whole of the law. Welcome to Thelema Coast to Coast. My name is John Crow, and I'm the host of the show. The first thing I'd like to do is apologize to the listeners of Show 25. It appears that there was an initial mixing problem, and about 100 people downloaded the version that was mixed incorrectly. I appreciate the 5 listeners who emailed to let me know the problem. I was able to fix it in the morning the day after. And so it wasn't that bad, but about 100 downloads did happen before I got the corrected version out there. If you were one of those listeners that obviously had sound overlapping at about 20 minutes into the show, feel free to go back to the website and download the corrected version. And again, I apologize about that. I want to remind everybody that there are 4 ways to contact the podcast. The first is by email. Send a message to podcast@thelemacoasttocoast.com. You can go to the Thelema Coast to Coast website, www.thelemacoasttocoast.com. On the website, you can give direct feedback there. The voicemail line is 206-600-4216. I can't stress this enough. This is an audio show, so audio voicemails are greatly appreciated. Didn't get any for this podcast, so everybody listening, if you're interested in giving feedback, do consider calling the voicemail line. And of course, the mailing address is Thelema Coast to Coast, care of John Crow, P.O. Box 7045, Marietta, Georgia. That's M-A-R-I-E-T-T-A, Georgia, G-A. Zip code is 30065, and that is in the United States. And that is the address to send postcards to. Gotten a number of postcards, and we'll be getting some stickers out shortly. The website has been recently updated with about 6 more postcards, and I've got 1 more to scan in. So thanks to everybody who has been sending those, and I encourage everybody else who wants to get a Thelema Coast to Coast bumper sticker to send a postcard in. And once those are gone for good. Okay, another thing is on the Thelema Coast to Coast website, I've got a poll listed right now asking how you all listen to the podcast. I'm curious to know if you download it and listen to it on your computer, if you listen to it off the website, do you burn CDs of it, do you listen to it on an iPod or other MP3 player? How do you listen to the podcast? This will help me know how to best utilize the medium to deliver it to the most people possible. Also in that direction, the website software that I use has the option for me to send out newsletters or newsletter emails, and I haven't done that yet. I'm not big on spamming people, and I don't want it to be seen as spam, and I've been kind of hesitant to do that, but I'm wondering if people would appreciate an email notification of the newest podcast that has all the information about what's on the podcast, what songs and aspects like that. So if you could let me know whether or not you would mind an email newsletter with each podcast, that means probably about 2 a month or so, I would really appreciate it. Okay, so now here is some really big news for the podcast, and this is in particular for the listeners out in the Bay Area of California. What are you doing the night of June 6th, 2006? That is 060606. If you don't have plans for that Tuesday night, I encourage everybody listening in the Bay Area to go to the bar Jupiter's. because at 6 o'clock on the night of 06-06-06, I will be at Jupiter's hosting the first Thelema Coast to Coast listeners meeting and greeting. There, I hope to meet a whole bunch of listeners. I will have Thelema Coast to Coast bumper stickers, and also Keith418 will be there, and some of the other guests that have been on the show. So if you are in the Bay Area on June 6th, again, Jupiter's, I will have the address of Jupiter's on the Thelema Coast to Coast website. I also want to say thank you very much to Angel, who helped plan the event and select a location. This is a great way to celebrate the day of 666, so I hope everybody listening in the Bay Area can make it. I know 6 is early, but we will be there all night, so feel free to stop by after you get off work and come and meet some of the people who listen to the show and meet me, Keith418, and other people who make it possible. And if anyone has any questions, again, please email or go to the website. So I hope to see you there. There was a lot of positive feedback about the Holy Days podcast that I did. On the first day of the writing of the Book of the Law, I played a recording of a woman from England that was produced by Stephen Ash. During the introduction of that episode, I played a segment of his reading of the first chapter. He has a CD available that has all three readings on it, and I wanted to make people aware of that. If you go to the Thelema Coast to Coast website or look in the show notes, you'll see a link to his site. For those that don't remember or did not listen to the first reading of the Book of the Law, here is a segment from the second chapter.
Hear me, ye people of sighing. The sorrows of pain and regret are left to the dead and the dying, the folk that not know me as yet. These are dead, these fellows. They feel not. We are not for the poor and sad. The lords of the earth are our kinsfolk. Is a god to live in a dog? No, but the highest are of us. They shall rejoice, our chosen, who sorroweth is not of us.
As you can hear, the sound quality is quite good. I highly recommend people who want to have a good, clean recording of the Liberal chapters to look into Stephen Ash's CD. It costs £8 plus shipping, and that's £2.50 for UK purchasers and about £5 for US purchasers. Again, the link to that is on the Thelema Coast to Coast website. Now, I've also recently received a copy of Aleister Crowley and the Practice of the Magical Diary. This is the revised and expanded edition, published by Red Wheel Weiser and edited by James Wasserman, and has a foreword by J. Daniel Gunther. For those who are not familiar with the earlier versions of the book, this has the copy of John St. John and also Master of the Temple in it, as well as a bunch of introductory material from Wasserman, some preface material, a foreword, and then some glossary and selected bibliography. For those who listened to the previous shows have heard repeated references about keeping a magical diary. And this is a very good book to have to show you two examples of what keeping a magical diary is like. The first one, John St. John, is Crowley, who kept a magical diary while on a magical retreat in Paris. And then the second one is of Akkad, his master of the temple. Both of these were published in the Equinox, but it's nice to have them in one volume. I can't say that the introduction does that much. Wasserman selects a bunch of paragraphs or entries from the various diary and throws his own commentary in there. In my opinion, you can skip most of that and go straight to the important material of Crowley's John St. John and the Master of the Temple. I did find the preface very interesting because it gives a list of a number of the books that are going to be coming out soon. And those include, like, the Equinox 4-3, the Diary of a Magus, and other papers. It talks about Equinox 3-2 coming out soon from Thelema Media. and some other books, including a book called The Inward Journey by J. Daniel Gunther. For those who don't know, J. Daniel Gunther is the head of the AA lineage that is advertised in this book. So it'll be interesting to see what he has to offer. There are other things that are listed in here as coming out, so I would encourage everybody to check that out. But really, it is a good book for the having the diary examples of Crowley and Acod in one place and easy to reference. It's put together pretty well. Wasserman did an excellent job doing the layout, and the overall appearance is nice. It's very easy to read. The footnotes and everything are nice and clear. So, as I said, go out and get a copy. It's from Red Wheel Weiser, 1995. Well worth the money. All right. So now let's get to some listener feedback. The first is from a listener named Isabel. She writes, 93, John, I really enjoy your anniversary podcast. Keith 418 was inspiring as always. I was also interested in the interview with the Latex Records dude. The interview actually gave me an idea. On my MySpace, I started a reverse remix contest where I would be the one remixing the artist who submit their tracks. After I have them all done, I'll be having the tracks judged by some folks who are either in the industry or whose musical opinions I trust, and the winner, well, I'm not 100% sure what the winner will get as of yet. I'm especially looking for Thelemites and or occultists who make music, since a few of the people who would be judging the remix would be fellow OTO members here in New York City. If you could ask some of your listeners who are musicians or who may know musicians who would like to enter, I would be happy to remix them. It's free to enter. If nothing else, you get a free remix out of it. 93, Isabel. One problem, Isabel, you didn't give me a URL to your MySpace. So anybody interested in this, send me an email and I will send you back Isabel's private email. Or Isabel, please go to the Thelema Coast to Coast website and go into the forum and post in there with your MySpace page so people can go and submit music if they want. The next email is from a listener named Harry. He says, I give you some feedback. You are doing a wonderful job. Your pods are absolutely super great. The only problem is that they are few and too short, in my opinion. I am a lone practitioner trying to hook up with the Swedish Lodge of the OTO, but they seem to be non-functional, so I have to rely on you. Please keep up the good work. Hello, Swedish OTO. If you're out there, give me a holler, and I will give you Harry's email so that you can get in touch with him. But thanks for listening, Harry, and I hope you continue to enjoy the show. Okay, the next one is from a listener named Keith. He says, hi, first let me just say that I really enjoy your podcast. I'm looking forward to the next one. Thanks for the service you're providing to the occult community. You really do a great job as an interviewer. Keith goes on to give me some suggestions, actually some very good feedback. Don't need to go into here, but I did receive the message, Keith, and I will be following up on that. So thank you for that. Similarly, I have an email here from Gil. Says, hello in 93, this is Gil from Israel. A nice little pun on Israel. I like your show very much and it gives me hours of pleasure and joy. Being quite isolated here in Israel and all. Anyway, you were asking about suggestions for podcasts. Well, concerning the AA and other topics, I would really love to hear James A. Eshelman, ex-College of Thelema, his book on the magical and mystical system of the AA is an amazing accomplishment itself and also very entertaining. And Gil also goes on for another recommendation. Again, I have made the invitation out to Eshelman through the people that I know him. I have no direct contact information for James Eshelman, but this is an open invitation. I would love to have him on the show. So anybody listening who knows him, please pass on that. I would love to have him on the show. Anyway, Gil continues, keep up the good work, love is the law, 93, apologize for my typos, my Hebrew is better than my English. Well, Gil, you did fine, and thank you for the feedback, and thank you for the suggestions. The next email is from someone who calls himself Dr. B. That's B-E-E. He says, John, your conversation with Keith about Book E was a bit on the dull side. The entire segment can be summed up in 2 points. A, this is an important document for practical work, and B, don't stop doing what it says. Well, that's just wonderful. But it doesn't deliver any real insight into the text, and there's plenty to be had. For instance, you could have discussed the slight flaw the method described in Section 2. You could have talked about extensions to the outdated course of reading. For instances, Erdman's History of Philosophy is not only expensive but difficult to find, but it obviously lacks commentary on the more recent and important trends in the philosophical literature. The AA curriculum is a bit stagnant, and modern students will find other texts more helpful and newer translations more lucid. Moving on, you could have discussed the utterly ridiculous first sentence of Section 3, the natural feedback between Sections 3 and 4, and personal experience in the form of lessons learned. Instead, you choose to walk through each section, giving a brief description, but little explanation or evidence of understanding. Regardless of the heavy criticism above, I think that Keith's point about the importance of exercises in Book E to ritual practice make the segment worthwhile. Too many modern texts skip over the step of training the mind, and people tend to forget that all the groundwork that is prescribed by Crowley as a preliminary to even the simplest banishing ritual. Putting on a silly hat and spinning around in circles is easier and much more fun than sitting still and controlling your focus, which is the first clue that Crowley didn't intend the rituals to serve as little plays or simple visualization exercises. As an aside, the OTO rituals do work as little plays that require no yogic training, but that's because they serve a different purpose. I can't even remember the last time I actually saw someone vibrate a god name during a ritual, but I guess that might be covered in a later show. In general, keep up the work and raise your standards. Dr. B. Well, I'm sorry you did not enjoy the conversation or you found it to be below your standards. I appreciate the feedback, and we'll see what we can do about meeting your standards. Thanks again, Dr. B. And the last email is from a Freighter FN. He says, 93, John, and thank you for continuing to produce your excellent podcast. I really appreciate the fact that your shows serve as a forum for serious, intelligent, and highly relevant discussions of magic and the Thelemic community. In addition to listening to the new episodes as they come out, I've been working my way through the archives from start to finish. A few of my favorites are Keith 418's lecture on the Goetia, Richard Kaczynski's on Crowley's Magical Practice, T. Allen Greenfield's discussion on the history of Wicca. Today I listened to Keith 418's Nietzsche for Thelemites lecture while cleaning the kitchen and found it very thought-provoking. Keep up the great work. Well, thanks for the email, Freighter FN, and this is a reminder to everybody. You can go to the Thelema Coast to Coast website and download every podcast that has come out. They are all available and freely downloadable. The RSS feed keeps about the last 20 or so. So as new podcasts come out, some that are older fall off the list. But again, you can go to the Thelema Coast to Coast website and get all of the podcasts there just by clicking on the podcast links and then going through the listing and finding the show number and or date. So that's all of today's feedback. Thanks to everybody who sent an email. I really appreciate the feedback. Again, I want to encourage everybody to take a few moments and let me know how the show is going, what you like, what you don't like. I especially appreciate that email from Dr. B. After all, it's your feedback that lets me know how I'm doing and helps influence the future of the show. And also, do call the voicemail. I love to get voicemail messages. 206-600-4216. Now, I need to give you all a warning about the next month or so. The podcast may be delayed. There was already a delay between the last one at the end of April and this one. It's already been almost 3 weeks, and that's because some classes and some other responsibilities of mine. And starting this weekend, over the next 4 weekends, I'm going to be out of town, culminating in 10 days in California again. On June 6, 2006, Jupiter's having the first Thelema Coast to Coast meet and greet. So That will be delaying some of the podcast. I hope to get one more out before I head out to the West Coast. If not, the next podcast will be in mid-June. So, again, I apologize about those delays. I encourage you all to go back and listen to previous shows if you haven't heard them in the meantime. As anybody who's been listening for a while knows, that Latex Records has been a sponsor of the show. They've given a large number of CDs to the podcast to play and to give away to the listeners. If you're interested in winning one of these CDs, all you have to do is send an email to podcast@thelemacoasttocoast, put CD giveaway in the subject, and inside the email body, give your full name and mailing address. I have 3 more CDs left, giving Mystified, that I played at the end of the last show, away today. And I have that winner. And I don't know if the winner's, if this is the winner's real name or their craft name, but the listing has the first name as Mongo up in Vermont. So, Mongo, you are the winner of the Mystified CD. And the CD that I'm going to be playing at the end of the show today is from a group called Little Tin Box, and the album is called Action Music. I will speak more about that at the end of the show. Okay, now that I've rambled on enough, it's time to move into the program content. First is going to be a quick interview with Anita Kraft. She was on previously talking about Babylon Rising. Babylon Rising is in just a month or so, and so I wanted to have her on again and just make sure you all were aware of it, for those who didn't hear the listing before. I think the festival is going to be pretty cool for those who can attend, and so I wanted to make sure everybody knew about it, and they had enough time to register and go if possible. Also, I have the first interview from outside of the United States. It's a brief one with a gentleman named Petter Martensen. He is one of the organizers of the Thelemic Gathering of the Tribes in Europe. It was my first Skype interview, so let me know how the sound quality is. I think it's pretty good, although the way Skype handles silence may be problematic. Let me know. But Petter is with a group of Thelemites who are getting together in Sweden. This is a, I think this is the 4th event that they have had like this. They're kind of been intermittent. A number of them were in Sweden, one was in Norway, and they're looking to make this an annual thing. So if you're in Europe and you can go, it's in about a month, I encourage you to contact them and check it out. And if you're in the United States and can head over to Europe, again, I think it would be very cool if some of the Thelemites in the United States could head to it. So I have that interview. And then the last interview is a very, very interesting one with a fixture within the Thelemic community for well over the last decade, a Sora Nima. She's written a book called Mott Magic back in the mid-90s, and it introduced the kind of the Typhonian idea of dual currents, and we kind of get into that. We talk about what Mott Magic is and just kind of get an overview of what her magical system's all about, including the organization she's in. So I thought that was a really interesting interview, and she's also open to questions. So after you listen to the interview, if there are any questions that you have, feel free to email podcast@thelemacoasttocoast, and I will get those to her and have her on the show again to answer them. So with Without further ado, here is Anita Kraft.
Anita, 93, welcome back to the podcast.
93, John, thanks for having us back again.
Now, Babylon Rising is just a month away, so I wanted to have you back on the show to give everybody a reminder and talk about the lineup, just in case some people haven't heard about that. So can you just give a brief overview again of what Babylon Rising is?
Sure. Babylon Rising is a festival being held in French Lick, Indiana, at a festival site called Our Haven, which you can get to at ourhaven.com. And it's a pan-Thelemic festival. We've invited people from all across the Thelemic community to get together and celebrate, and a weekend of, you know, Thelemic brotherhood and sisterhood. It's being put on by a public benefit corporation called the Amalantra Foundation, which is set up to provide grants to not-for-profit Thelemic organizations. So basically, it's a fundraiser to raise money to then make donations to nonprofit Thelemic organizations.
Now, those are nonprofits that are just in Indiana or nationwide?
No, well, initially it's in Indiana, but if somebody, say, from like Illinois or Ohio wants to apply, then what we have to do is just register in those states.
Okay.
So we'll register in other states as needed.
Okay. What lineup of speakers and presentations are you going to have?
Well, we have what I think is an excellent lineup. Our main speaker is Lon Duquette, who's going to be doing 5 different presentations, including one on his new book on The Key to Solomon's Key, Secrets of Magic and Masonry, which I've heard is just excellent. We also have Sora Nima, who wrote Mott Magic from the Tifonian OTO community. He's also a founding member of the Horace Mott Lodge in Cincinnati in Ohio.
She's also on this podcast.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. I'm glad you were able to get in touch with her. She's a fascinating person and is definitely an elder of the Thelemic community.
She definitely has a very interesting perspective, and that's why I wanted to have her on the show, and also from your suggestion previously. So it's actually this show that she's on.
Oh, great.
And you also have some other guest speakers, correct?
Right. We have Richard Kaczynski, who did A Curse Perdurabo, which was an excellent biography on Aleister Crowley, and also just recently had a new book come out on the Detroit OTO community. We have a band called Incas, really excellent band, Middle Eastern, Native American, African, and Eastern type of music. They are coming in from California to play, and they're just wonderful. We have some local speakers. We also have a man named Michael Manor, who runs a Kadishi kind of sacred sexuality group, who's going to be there and is going to be speaking. We have a group called Stinky Beetle Tribe, which is a fire-tending tribe out of Indianapolis, which really doesn't quite describe them. I had the chance to see them this year. They've tended ritual fires at Starwood and Elf Fest and other pet festivals, and they actually do fire shows, poi, spinning, fire swords, flaming whips, all kinds of stuff, and they perform all night long around the fire. And so they're a lot of fun, and they'll keep the excitement going around the fires at night. And then we have some other local people, Eric Friedman out of Starry Arch out of St. Louis, who's going to be doing a class. I'm actually going to be doing a class on the Star Ruby. Andre Vitimus is another guy who is going to be doing a topic, and he's out of Columbus, Ohio. Natalie, a local member, is actually going to be doing an introduction to Thelema for Neophytes, an introduction to Thelema, because we'll have a lot of people at the festival who actually aren't that familiar with Thelema. So since it's a Thelemic festival, we thought maybe a lecture, a class on what is Thelema would be a good thing. So lots of good stuff, lots of entertainment besides the workshops going on, and I think definitely be a great festival.
Now, just to review some of the logistics, this is a camping festival, though.
Definitely a festival. It's outside at a nature sanctuary. It is camping. There are hot showers. There's water. There are restrooms and things like that. But yes, it's primitive camping. The only electricity is actually on the stage. So people need to bring tents and sleeping bags and that type of thing.
Now, they also need to bring their own food?
Yes, there's food. There's a food vendor, though. We actually have a food vendor out there. So there will be somebody actually vending food and good food. I had it this weekend. But yeah, they need to bring food, coolers, that type of thing.
All right. And then also the place that it's occurring at, are there any restrictions on who can attend or anything like that?
This is actually an adult-only event, which is not all that common. A lot of our Haven festivals are children are allowed, but this is an 18 or over event. You have to be 18 to come in. We just feel like the activities and the things that are offered at this festival, we preferred it the first time we did it to be 18 and over. So children are not allowed at this event. Although there is an area of our Haven that we will not be using, that somebody could, if they wanted to bring children, they could camp in that section and then just don't bring kids into the gate. So if somebody does want to come and they want to camp like outside of the festival area but still on the grounds and have their kids there, you know, and swap out coming in and out or whatever, they can certainly do that. They need to get in touch with us and we can give them more about that information about that, because we have a couple of local people actually that will be doing that, camping up on the hill with their children.
All right. When is the deadline for advance registration?
The deadline for advance registration is the 13th, which is 3 days before the festival.
June 13th.
Yes. So Everybody has till June 13th to get in at the $80 price range. After that, it goes to $93 at the gate.
And is that for the whole weekend, or is that a day pass?
Yes, that's for the whole weekend and includes all activities, et cetera, that are going on throughout the weekend.
All right. Are there any day passes or anything like that?
We do have a day pass, and the day passes are available at the gate for $45. They don't include overnight camping. So if somebody wants to just come in for a day, they can come in for $45 at the day.
Now, what is the website that you all have that has all of this information and this schedule and so forth?
It's BabylonRising.org. That's BabylonRising, BabylonRising.org.
Is there anything else you should add?
No, except that we're going to have a great time, and we hope as many people can come out and spend the weekend with us as are available to come. I think, as festivals go, our haven is a wonderful, wonderful facility. There's no quiet time. We will be drumming all night long until the sun comes up, till morning rush, and I think everybody that comes will have a great time. So I hope people can come out and have a good time with us.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. I really wanted to support this and get the word out as much as possible. So if people can attend, I sure hope they do.
Thanks, John, and I really appreciate your support. I know you're not getting to come this year, but maybe we'll get you up here next year.
But you'll have to let me know how it is. Maybe you can send some pictures, of course, appropriate pictures, put them on the website or something.
Yeah, I should say, let me add one more thing. Our haven is closing optional in certain areas, and after 10 o'clock at night, it's closing optional everywhere, too, just so people know that the facility itself is closing optional.
All right. Well, sounds good. Thanks for being on the show again. 93.
Okay, John. 93.
Again, I wish Anita and her group great success with this festival. And people should go to www.babylonrising.org and check out what they're doing. As I said earlier, the next interview is with Peter Martinsson. And Peter is a Thelemite in Sweden. And he is one of the organizers of the Thelemite Gathering of the Tribes. So here is Peter with information about that event.
We have on the phone Peter Martinsson from the Gathering of the Tribes. 93, Peter.
93.
Now, you're one of the organizers of the Gathering of the Tribes. How many years has this been going on in Sweden?
It happened a couple of times during the late 90s. And then there was one gathering in Norway in 2001. And then we picked up the ball after that. So there's been three during the last couple of years.
So this will be the fourth one?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, and what is the Gathering of the Tribes?
The Gathering of the Tribes is basically an opportunity for European members of the OTO to get together and meet, kind of like NotaCon, but not the same size.
Okay, approximately how many people attend every year?
It's been different. I know in Norway, I think we were about like 45 people. I can't really remember right now, but around 45. In 2002 in Sweden, we were around a bit over 30. And last year, we were only actually like 15 or 16 people. So it goes up and down.
Okay. Hopefully, we can get the word out and get some more people attending this year. Where is it taking place exactly?
Outside a small town called Sjöbo in Sweden, which is in the southern parts, really close to Malmö, one of the major cities in Sweden.
Right. And how much is it to attend?
It's 1,000 Swedish kronor, which is about $135. And that includes the venue, sleeping arrangements, food, and the lectures for the entire weekend.
Okay. And what kind of things will people see when they attend?
What kind of things they will see? You mean like lectures and...
Yeah, what kind of lectures? What are the events that are planned?
So far, I can't really divulge that information because we're still in discussions with various people. But I can say that if those things will happen, they will be very interesting. We're talking to some people from the States and some people from the UK.
Excellent. And what kind of accommodations are people going to be experiencing?
The venue itself consists of three buildings, which is one major building and two smaller ones. And in the two smaller ones, there are some bunk beds and some single beds as well. And in the big building, there's the main floor, which consists of a dining hall and a room that is great for lectures and rituals, and an upper floor with beds as well.
So it should be pretty comfortable for most people. It's not camping or anything.
No. There's only 32 beds available, though, first come, first served basis. But there's ample room for a lot more people sleeping, yeah, either on the floors on mattresses or bringing their tents if they feel like tenting out in nature. Because they're very close to the woods as well. So
great. Who should people contact if they want to get in touch with you all?
They should email gathering@somewhatpretty.com. Gathering@somewhatpretty. It's somewhatpretty.com.
Okay, and I'll put a link to that on the website show notes. Is there anything else that you want to add?
I don't think so. Hopefully people will attend, people will be interested. It's also open, of course, to American brothers and sisters. I've had a sister from the U.S. asking me if it was okay for Americans to show up, and of course, they're more than welcome. We actually had an American brother there in 2002. Well, we hope to get the ball rolling. We want to make this an annual tradition, and hopefully it won't happen in Sweden for all eternity, hopefully, that perhaps the UK will pick it up, or Germany, and whatever.
The whole idea is, though, to have some kind of group event for all the people in Europe, and possibly move it around all through Europe.
Exactly. We hope to create a better cooperation between bodies in Europe, that we actually have a place and a forum where we can meet and get together and do stuff together.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thanks for being on the show. I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that the gathering was happening.
Very much appreciated.
And I wish you all great success.
Thank you very much.
93.
The next interview is with Sor Nima. As I said earlier, she's the author of Mott Magic and some other books. And she's going to be talking about the Mottian current, or the dual current that is going along in her system and the Typhonian system, about what is going on with the multiple currents of Horus, Mott, and other currents going on simultaneously. It's very interesting, a very different perspective on Thelemic magic. So here's Soren Nima.
We have Nima on the phone. Welcome to the podcast, Nima, 93.
93, and thank you.
There has been a lot of discussion lately about where Thelemic magic is evolving and going to. And you came out with a book in 1995 called Mott Magic, A Guide to Self-Initiation. And within it, you talk about some different ideas about the Thelemic current in relation to Horus and the goddess Mott. A lot of people are not familiar with this. I know myself, I'm only vaguely familiar with it. So I'd like to start by just kind of getting an overview of what Mott magic is. If you had to break it down into maybe a paragraph or two, how would you describe Mott magic to someone who has no familiarity with it?
Well, I'd first ask the person what sort of familiarity with magic in general do they have, or else I'll present the classic definition to find out if they accept that magic is the science and the art of causing change to occur in conformity with will. And if they're fine with that, then we go on and break it down a little further. That Mott magic is a form of Thelemic magic. And one of the reasons why it appeared, at least through me, is I didn't find on the bookshelves in the various occult stores anything much beyond Israel regarding stuff and a few commentaries on Crowley's work. And it also occurred to me that, well, I thought from my reading of and working with Aleister Crowley's magic that he was encouraging each magician to invent or discover the individuals tailored to the individual magic. And the shelves were bare. I mean, there are commentaries on Crowley's stuff, But where was the original work that he seemed to be encouraging? And so I did a general vow, as it were, to, okay, if there's more information out there waiting to appear, then I'm up for it, if nobody else is. And had a series of various visions and dialogues with interesting astral entities that sort of were more than helpful in producing the work.
Okay.
And so what makes it different? Well, for one thing, it balances out the tetragrammaton formula by having a second female to go with Isis, as it were. And so we're using the fourfold formula of the father, mother, son, daughter to make a square out of a triangle, I suppose. It just felt more balanced to me.
Your book is organized in kind of a three-part aspect. You have the theory in the beginning. The middle has some of your received texts, and then you have the practice or the praxis of your magic in the back. So, well, let's start with the theory part. There's a two paragraphs kind of that touch on your squaring of the triangle that you were talking about. On page 7, it says, although the child is a synthesis of the mother and father dialectic, and the child we're talking about here is Rahur Kweet, there was a fourth factor needed to complete the family of eons, to complete the magical formula of Yod-He-Vav-He, where Yod is the father, He the mother, Vav the son, and the final He is the daughter. The fourth factor is Mot, and her eon is an effect in tandem with the eon of Horus. The female form of Mot links with the infant male form of Huru Parkroth, Hippocrates, god of silence. HPK is the child Horus and is seen by some as the patron and namesake of the eon following Rahur Kweet, the martial form of Horus.
Oh, well, no, I meant it's not the child of Horus, but the child Horus.
The child, I'm sorry. So what I find kind of different here is that the way Chapter 3 talks of the Book of the Law talks about the progression of the eons is that they're linear, and that from Osiris it went to the sun, Horus, and is the kind of the eon of the force and fire. And then the Book of the Law talks about how Mot will come after Horus and assume the throne in the eon of justice and so forth. But what you're saying here is that they're concurrent, that they form a dual current, that there's the eon of Horus and the eon of Mot simultaneously. Can you elaborate that, please?
Oh, okay. Well, the double current has, in my point of view and what I consider discovery, but it's always been there, it's not only a double current, it's a panionic current. My present take, instead of just being Horus and Mot running simultaneously, is that all the aeons are running concurrently. And I defend that by the fact that if you go around the world, you will find, in practice by human beings, the formulae for, well, for convenience sake, I divide it up into six aeons, okay? I have the nameless aeon, which is prehistory and figured by Beth, the dwarf African god. Say, like, for shamanic stuff, voodoo stuff, that would belong in that aeon.
Okay.
Isis is most typified by Wicca and other goddess-oriented. And actually, Isis comes before Osiris in the pseudo-historical sense that I see it. But the early matriarchal-type religions would be classified under Isis. Osiris is covering the three religions of the book, and plus any martial, extremely martial-type civilization and practice, which, of course, is, you know, Islam, Christianity, and Judaism, and others that I haven't really exhaustively researched, but those three are good enough.
Okay.
The Lima, of course, is for Horus, and the Mott magic I see as for Mott in the future. Aeon is termed the wordless aeon, wherein speech will not be as necessary as it is now, and is more or less a telepathic sort of communication and formula. So the six various aeons are all running simultaneously. The linearity that Crowley emphasized, I think, is simply a product of his Victorian upbringing. So it depends on where you stand as to what you see.
Okay. Well, similarly, in your discussion of this, we go to now talk about the practice. So, okay, we have the concurrence of the eons going in your system. So that would mean that at any given time, any particular magician could, I guess, tap into that particular formula of that eon?
Right. Uh-huh. It's all open for grabs as long as you know what you're doing.
Okay, there's a... Let me read a paragraph out of your book that kind of... I want to get it explained a little more. It says, Mott magic arises from and is a form of Thelemic magic. The system of initiation formulated by Crowley. Although it's useful to be familiar with Thelema, you can practice Mott magic with no experience in other systems except your own.
Right.
The only requirement for success in Mott magic is that you be in the process of discovering your true will. So if it's a form of Thelemic magic, are you saying that it's only related in the fact that both Thelemic magic and Mott magic are aspects of manifesting the will?
I say all magics are a form of manifesting the will. It's not limited to Thelemic magic or Mott magic. I'm also an elder in a coven and have been a high priestess in a coven, so I can speak to that. I was born a Catholic. Well, you don't get born Catholic, but I was baptized as a helpless infant, and so I, you know, can claim a little on the Neo-Syrian style of magic,
okay,
et cetera, et cetera. So as long as a person is seeking and or doing one's true will, all magic, I mean, Crowley defines it, magic is the art and science. He didn't say Thelemic magic is.
Right.
So it's a sort of a general requirement of at least an awareness that there's more to life than meets the eye. And the only pursuit worth pursuing is finding out about it.
Then what sets Mott magic different than Thelemic magic? Or what makes it its own thing out within the kind of the groupings of Thelemic magic or magic in general?
Well, good question, and I hadn't really considered it. What makes it different? Rahu-Kwi is a god of war and vengeance. And I see the magic mainly is to counter and to tear down all the black practices that have existed up to the point of the writing of Liber Al. Okay, that was the deciding factor. So there, it's been a mostly deconstructive aim, as I've seen in my practices with Thelema. Mott is the restoration, because we cannot live in the midst of the destroyed old black formulae, but we need to reconstruct after the deconstruction to build a better formula, and this deals with trying to change human nature, some may see. And yeah, it is. But the part, I have 3 points to Mott magic and what the aims are. The first is personal transformation for the individual practitioner. You do it to change yourself. Second one is to produce the next species of genus Homo, Homo veritas.
Okay.
And that is a mutant variation of us wherein, let me rephrase it, the emphasis is on the development of a telepathic and empathic field that already exists as the Jungian racial unconscious. Okay? And the point, one of the points of Mott Magic is waking up the racial unconscious to become the racial consciousness. And the third factor is to learn how to communicate with non-humans. We have our intelligent animals here on the planet already, and there are other entities that perhaps can be seen as separated from us, not so much by distance of outer space, but by being in a slightly alternative universe.
Now,
there are many of those.
Now, when you're talking about that, I mean, we already have existing spiritual technology to get in touch with, you know, to use the common terms, demons and angels or entities of higher consciousness. Is that the kind of entity you're talking about?
Well, it can be any and all. You know, it's not restricted to any particular dimension, any particular distance, any particular means or vibrational levels, or however people phrase this thing. It can be dolphins and elephants, too. It's non-human, however you care to define that.
Okay.
So no limits on it at all. And so far, the emphasis has been basically for the individual in the practice, and basically for the change of the human race. Because, I mean, if you look around, read the news, just watch TV, you know, we are not as human as we need to be. If that makes sense.
Yeah, there are times where you have to wonder if we're actually devolving rather than evolving.
Well, there are always opportunists who will take advantage of our lack of communication. I mean, one of the biggest jumps forward has been the development of the Internet, in my humble opinion, that this is definitely a step towards species consciousness, as it were.
There's been a lot of discussion about that and whether or not the Internet is helping move people forward or if it's just another means to the end of communication. You know, we went from writing on cave walls to writing on papyrus to writing on parchment to paper, now to writing electronically. If all that's really changing is the means, or is there something more to it?
Oh, well, the scope. I mean, just taking the Horace Mott Lodge online, for instance, we have people from, of course, England and Australia and the Netherlands and Brazil and Russia and Czechoslovakia, and I think we have some Oriental folks, too. So it internationalizes the dialogue, and more people can be in touch at greater distances.
Right. It removes the geographic barriers.
Yeah. And that, I think, is its best characteristic so far.
Well, this podcast alone has over 1,000 listeners spread out throughout the whole world. I think we've got listeners on almost every continent, 20 or 30 countries. So,
well, there you go.
Yeah, it definitely allows the message to get out.
However, I would suggest to everybody, put it on paper, copy it to paper, print it out, and store it away, because the only problem with electronic communications is ephemeral.
Yes. It's very much so. Now, in your book, not only do you have the theory and the practice section, you also have your Liber Pennae Praenumbra.
Yeah, the book of the foreshadowing of the feather. I also, by the way, I rewrote it in the way of mystery in the back in the appendix. I thought, you know, why do I have to use this King James Bible crap that Crowley was stuck with, and Liber Al? Not to be disrespectful to Megatherion, but he was a child of his time, too.
So what is this Liber? What is the message of it? And is it personal to you, or does it have relevance to humanity in general?
I think it's yes to both. Both relevance to me and I think to humanity in general. Did you read it?
No, I have not had a chance to read it. I apologize.
Okay. Well, it goes by fairly quickly. In fact, I suggest there you could do a side-by-side between the old version and the new version. It's simply, how does one say, I was kind of given a grand tour of things during the visionary process. Got it verbally first,
mm-hmm.
you know, just orally. And then as soon as that particular vision faded out, I went and sat down and started writing, and I sort of heard a narrator, as it were, putting the words out and sort of like recapping what I saw. I also did a painting of it, too. But, yeah, I try to go multimedia whenever I can. But this was it was a visionary thing that had followed a visual thing. The character you may have seen mentioned of Natan, it was my interlocutor, as it were. And Natan is the persona I was presented of the fully developed human race coming back in time. Sort of, if you're a science fiction fan, there was a story, I think it was Heinlein's story, something about all you morons out there, or something, the fact that a person traveled back and conceived himself before he had a sex change to be, in other words, it's a time loopy thing,
mm-hmm.
that the entity that gave its name as Natan came back to make sure, to load the dice, as it was put, that he did come into, he, she, and it, us, them, came into existence to move the human race on. Because there are forces of resistance. I mean, even nature resists change, as Crowley said, to our development. And the point of the apparition, the visits, the writing, and all this is to give us an edge to overcome our stupidity before we blow ourselves to bits. In fact, this was back when the nuclear clock was like at 11:55.
Oh.
If you remember the nuclear clock.
Yes.
Right. So things were pretty hairy at the time, it felt. And so this was the appearance in the tour, and this whole development was more or less to save our bacon until we got smart enough to save it for ourselves.
All right. I did have a chance to go through a little bit of it, and I'm not saying that I read it fully, and that's why, but I did skim it, and I read a number of your notes, and I noticed the last section of Ipsos, and you're saying the word of the eon is Ipsos.
Yeah, now it turns out to be a name. Post that, was there's a market research company of the same name. And I think there's the same name. Ipsos is also a Greek island.
Oh, okay.
Which I found out after the fact.
Well, can you talk a little about what the word Ipsos means? I mean, you talk about in here, like, the various spellings of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, the way I picked up on it, you know, I came and I thought, okay, let's parse this thing out. And Latin for the same is ipse. Latin for either bone or mouth is os, like osteoporosis, etc.
Right.
Okay, but it also is like osculate for kissing, etc. So you can have either bone or mouth. You can translate that. So a lot of the formula is repeated in Pene Penumbra is by the same mouth.
Mm-hmm.
It points out contradictions. The little paragraph 19 on page 94 of Mont Magic. By the same mouth that breathes the air do words of doubt pour forth. So it, and it appears elsewhere, you know, that by the same mouth formula throughout here. So it sort of points out the inconsistencies of people and their take, shall I say, that by the same mouth is basically a formula of magic, that watch what you say to make sure you're being self-consistent, or otherwise you're going to be in error in some fashion. And so that's where also the concept that real truth can only be comprehended in silence because, in a sense, all words are lies. So that is the nut of that particular formula.
I want to bring up Frater Akkad because he's also involved in the Ma'ion. Most people are not aware, but for a short period of time, he declared the word that the Aeon of Ma had arrived, and he actually, this was in 46, that it had supplanted the Horus Aeon. Later he took this back and said he was premature in saying that. He was saying the word, and he was specifically saying the Ma Aeon, M-A Aeon, and he got this from the word of the Aeon as manifestation, so it's the M-A of manifestation, and then
right.
I-O-N, Aeon. So is there a connection, do you think, with your work with the Mat Aeon and Akkad's Ma Aeon?
Well, in a sense, if you go back to the Tetragrammaton formula, unfortunately, Ma is mother, Ma'at is daughter. So we are a little bit different there.
Okay.
Yeah, but there's obviously a connection, yeah.
But he did consider it that it was the Mat Aeon, the one of the daughter.
Right, it's just the word itself,
right.
M-A.
Right, I think he was getting that from the word manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
So the work that you're doing, though, really is not directly connected to the work that Akkad was doing
No.
that time. Okay.
Now, I admire him as a fellow magician, but, you know, I didn't derive.
Okay. There are a lot of people who actually think there is some kind of connection between the work that you're doing and what Akkad was coming up with his Ma'ion. So that's good to know that there are two kind of disparate things working
right.
in a similar direction.
Right. It wasn't, we weren't really linked, you know, Crowley, Akkad, me, but nah, that doesn't work. But I definitely was impressed by his work, and especially what really floored me was the anatomy of the body of God.
Uh-huh.
That was the most impressive thing. But no, because he was still thinking linearly and, you know, saying that the Aeon of Horus was over when it wasn't.
Okay. Well, I think that's a good introduction to kind of the work that you're doing with magic. And I'm guessing that there's this huge depth to this. In fact, I know there is. And that a lot of people have an interest in it. So would you be opposed to people sending, emailing or sending audio questions to the podcast, and then in the future you coming on and kind of answering those directly?
Oh, I think it's a great idea.
Okay, so let's try and get a kind of a dialogue about this.
All right.
But I also want to, before you go, let people know that you're involved in an organization called the Horus Mat Lodge. Can
right.
you talk about what the work that the Horus Mat Lodge does?
Well, other than informing each other and picking each other's brains like crazy, which is a wonderful thing, I have found, because most of the people who are in the lodge are, and like most magicians I've met, are highly intelligent and people who know a lot about different specialties. The field of magic is way too big, I think, for anybody to comprehensively work at all.
Mm-hmm.
You have to specialize just because the field is too big. So you get a number of specialists getting together in a common cause, and it's dynamite. It really is. You have people who are really good at Enochian. We have several astrology experts. We have Lou Martinet from New Orleans Voodoo Tarot is a member. Any specialty you can mention, there's probably somebody in the lodge who can give you good information on it. But one of the unifying things that we do is the 11 star working, which derived many years ago, back around 1984 or so, on a little vision that I had, being a passenger coming home from work and just driving along, looking at the scenery, and all of a sudden I hear this voiceless sentence saying, "The thrones must be filled." I say, "Okay, what?" And it comes back, "The thrones must be filled, the catena must be complete." So that means, at least as I interpret it, that there needs to be representatives, working magicians, for every sephira on the Tree of Life. Plus Dayot.
Okay.
And, this is an interesting thing, and how do we do it? So there is information in Mont Magic about the 11th star, and it was basically like a sending out of a call for initiates to take responsibility for a sphere of human activity that's represented on the tree. And it took a while, but I swear it has occurred. I mean, the ritual itself was first performed at Starwood, which I don't know if you know about this particular gathering.
Yes.
You do.
I know of it. I have not attended it.
Oh, hey, it's killer if you get a chance. But anyhow, it's a place you can get enough magicians together in one physical space to do a group working, definitely. But it was at the counterpart in Winter Star, which is more a symposium that's held indoors in February. But we, in the Great Hall, we got the ritual together, performed it there, and it was launched. It was also performed in Seattle at the Harmonic Convergence celebrations in 85, and it got front page news with a color photo even from the local newspaper there. And many people have performed it hither, there, and yon, but it's evolved, of course, over the years. And we meet on the new moon, and we have a meeting place called the Moon Base Temple, which is really cool because the moon is one thing that everybody around the world can see.
So it's not a physical place on this planet. It's more of an astral place?
Well, the Moon Base Temple, it's in the sun. On the full moon, if you look up there at the crosshairs of the latitude and longitude in the center of the moon, there's a sort of underground bunker kind of temple, which there are descriptions in the books of, that we journey to and meet and greet our fellows up there. I can never distinguish individuals when I'm there astrally, but I get the feel for them.
Okay.
I mean, I sense the presence of other people, but there's a scrying pool, okay, in the second room of the temple where the earth is centered in the pool. So it's kind of a feedback system. When we do ritual in that temple, it affects the entire earth. That's the idea.
Okay.
And so that's where we kind of gather, and we each do our own ritual in our own temples around the world. Like I say, we compare magical records afterward, and it usually has a theme. This year's working is based on human organizations that are to serve us. I mean, we are, you know, they do serve us, and not always well. Like this time it was Hood, and it was news media and communications organizations that we were focusing on before. This time we're working up the tree. Some years we work down the tree. So it's hard to describe, kind of, but that's basically it. And one of the reasons, I think, not just for the working itself, that we're doing this is also one unifying factor for any group of people is shared work. And so instead of just drifting about like, you know, undirected or in a too vague situation, there has to be some point into being. And work is the best point for being together, and the best work is for changing ourselves and our fellow humans and our entire genus. So if it's organized like on a regular basis, and we thought the moons felt the best, you know, 13 moon years, mm-hmm. that it works out for the best, especially if you're working with a tree.
Okay.
Because it leaves you a couple of extra moons to get into it and recap.
Well, if somebody wanted to join the Horus Mott Lodge, what would be involved in that process?
Okay, what happens is you go to the website of horusmott.com and see what the material is on there. There's a contact Addy on the first page, and that will bring you into the attention span of Frater Shade, who is handling this. He's our gatekeeper and tiler of the temple, as it were. And he gets the incoming emails, and he asks the person to give a little background and sort of, you know, write a little intro for themselves. This is our initiation ordeal. And those who respond a second time generally just pop right in, and they're asked to, you know, they can lurk for as long as they want to, but eventually you would like to hear from them and, you know, with, hello, I'm so-and-so, and these are my fields of interest, mm-hmm. et cetera, and pop right into the conversational exchange.
So do you have, like, a forum online or a mailing list or something like that?
We work it through an email list.
Okay. Now, you also have an online publication, the Silver Star?
Yeah, this is the brainchild and more or less the production of Frater Aeon, who is, he and Frater Shade both live out in Seattle, which is cool. But he's the one who got the e-zine together. And I think he's doing a great job with it, if you've seen it at all.
Yes, I have. And actually, that's kind of what brought me to the Horus Mott Lodge. Somebody made reference to it, and I looked at
Ooh.
It and read some of the articles on it and everything. And that kind of converged with some other people suggesting that I interview you on the podcast.
Ah.
So that's it kind of had all of this convergence coming together, and that's why I contacted you.
Well, bless everybody's heart. Wonderful.
So I think this is great. I also want to make sure that people are aware that you have a number of books out. We've already talked a good deal about your magic book that was published by Samuel Weiser, but you also have a book called Way of Mystery published by Llewellyn. Can you just give a brief synopsis about what that book is about?
Well, it's taking the mystical side of it, and for me, The philosophical quest is that there's magic on one side and mystery on the other, two of which can't really operate properly without each other. Two sides of the same coin. And so after the magic, I thought I'd sort of get into the mystical sort of thing.
Okay.
The actual title that I had before Llewellyn changed it was Wings of Rapture, The Way of Mystery. They changed it to The Way of Mystery, Magic, Mysticism, and Self-Transcendence. Let me just take a look at the table of contents here to be able to say, yeah, this is more of a linear setup than Mott Magic was. This takes more of the inner aspects of what I'm doing. I don't know how else to say it. It's not set up in the three-part system that Mott Magic is. It's a much more linear way. It does also feature the Tree of Life and explaining about the, and there are a few rituals, etc., embedded in the text.
Okay.
Rather than separated out as praxis in the back. And other than saying it just, you know, emphasizes mysticism rather than magic. There's hardly anything, you know, I can really put in a few words.
Okay,
a few short words.
That's fine. Do you have any other books coming out anytime soon?
Well, not really. There are so many books coming out by everybody that I really hate the idea of killing more trees.
Okay.
If I see a need, I'll do it. But just for keeping my face before the public, as it were, that's really not necessary, I don't think.
All right.
But I'm open to suggestions. I am kind of working on a tarot deck.
Oh, okay.
And if you want to see the Four Aces, check out Silver Star number 5.
Okay.
The Four Aces are published there. But it's a real slow drag because there are too damn many tarot decks out there, too.
Right. Now, are you painting this, or are they being digitally created?
Painter program,
okay.
Yes.
So you're creating them within a digital format.
Right.
Okay.
What the material that's out there, as far as what I've put out, I think I've covered most of it, and I'm willing to answer questions where
okay.
I haven't covered it, and then this too. I'm also going to be at a gathering, French Lick, Indiana.
Right, the Babylon Rising.
Babylon Rising, yay. And also Starwood this year.
Fantastic. Too. So if people want to see you, they can go to either or both.
Right.
Well, again, I want to encourage listeners, if they have questions for you, to email those in, and I will get them to you, Nima, and then we can get back together in a little bit and try to answer some of those questions.
Oh, it sounds lovely.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate you taking the time.
And thank you for your interest, yes.
Well, thank you.
93. 93. Bye-bye.
Well, this brings us to the end of another show. I thank everybody for listening. If you have any questions for me, Keith418, or Soren Nima, feel free to email podcast@ThelemaCoastToCoast, go to the Thelema Coast to Coast website, or call the Thelema Coast to Coast voicemail line at 206-600-4216. Send your message there, and I or the other guests will answer it to the best of our ability. As I said earlier, Latex Records has given us a number of CDs, and the CD for today's outgoing music is called Action Music. It's by Littleton Box, and the song is called Drive. So I hope you all have enjoyed the podcast and enjoy the music, and I hope you stick around for the next podcast. Love's the law, love under Will.
Will, the podcast is almost over. Now what are you going to do?
Look for porn.
See, that's what you get when you raise your child to be a pagan.
You son of a... Your mom sucks!
All right, you two, that's quite enough.
I'm sorry, was it the pagan remark?
Actually, it probably was, but you can make up for it by tuning into Circle of Souls Pagan Radio.
Kick ass!
Yes, it does. Just surf on over to CircleOfSouls.net. Circle of Souls Pagan Radio.